Good afternoon, good morning. This is Gail Sylvia, your host of SylviaGlobal.com. Joining me today is an incredible woman. Her name is Marcia Nelson. She's a best-selling author. In fact, Deepak Chopra described her last book, Coming Home, The Return to True Self, as inspiring, excellent, and brilliant, and providing deep insight into the nature of the field of pure potentiality within us all. Shakti Gawain described her previous book, Coming Home, as integrating our human experience with our essential spiritual nature. Marcia, good morning. Thank you for being with me today. How are you?
I'm fabulous. Thank you for having me, Gail Sylvia.
It's really my honor. I'm so excited to introduce you and to have a conversation with you so that our global audience can learn about your works, your services, and your perspective on life. You're also a coach, confidant, and referred to as a catalyst for high net worth women. Can you define that for us?
Yes. For 25 years, I've been working as a coach almost exclusively for women, simply because women seem to be the ones who reach out for that kind of assistance. And what I came to discover in many of my clients was that they were very driven and therefore were very successful businesswomen, or they were very committed to philanthropic endeavors, or in some way found themselves in sort of the higher echelons financially and had a difficult relationship with their money, or had a difficult relationship with their position, or lost contact with who they truly were. And my specialty is that I help women get in touch with their true self, who they truly are in their heart of hearts, in their spirit, in their soul, at a very deep level, which sounds like, ooh, that might be a very odd thing to do, but it's very easy for me to do with women. I find that once women get in touch with their true self, everything else in their lives becomes clearer. They have an automatic, unconditional foundation within themselves that feels like well-being, feels like self-love, self-compassion, and they have a much better sense of how they fit in the world. And all of that makes them feel much more comfortable in their own skin. And that's how I like to see women feeling.
Do we have this as young girls and then lose it somewhere along the way?
You know, I think if we have it as young girls, we're very young. I think as soon as we start in the American public school system, it's systematically stripped from us. And no one intends to do that. No teacher ever intends to do that. And I'll give you an example, though, of how I witnessed it firsthand. I raised my niece and nephew for 9 years. My niece was 4 years old when she came to live with me. And as every little girl is, she was exuberant. She used to paint and draw, and we'd put her artwork on the fridge, and she used to hold them up and say, "Look, Marcia, I'm an artist." And talk about being comfortable in her own skin. She was thrilled to be in her own skin. And then she went into kindergarten, and some kids started criticizing her for drawing too many rainbows. But still, "Marcia, look, I'm an artist." And halfway through first grade, she would bring her drawings home, and I would hold them up and say, "Let's put them on the fridge. Look, Anna, you're an artist." And she started saying, "No, I'm not an artist." And she already was feeling diminished. I think that happens in our culture to girls. I think, frankly, everybody gets some version of that because we really are taught to comply in a way that is not based on being seen for the greatness and the brilliance that we all are. So I think girls particularly lose it in the sense that they are taught to be compliant and to think of other people before themselves, which usually really means instead of themselves, and that puts them on a slippery slope where the more socialized they become as they become older, they become more disconnected from themselves, and that is a recipe for depression, for sadness, grief, for making poor choices, and really for feeling alienated and alone, no matter how much they accomplish or how many outer things they're able to create around themselves that should, quote-unquote, should make them happy.
How do we own our power to create then and reconnect with that, especially in with given an example like that of your niece, which is so very common?
Mm-hmm. Once we get to a maturity in our life where we realize there's more to me than I'm in touch with, and you know, it's such a fabulous thing when it happens, and I say that with some irony because so many women, when they start to get that feeling, there's more to me than I'm living. There's more to me than other people know. I feel like I'm living in too small of a box, or I think I have more potential, or I'm tired of putting myself down. It feels so bad, or I'm, you know, it's various forms of discomfort. We don't tend to embrace discomfort. We try to avoid it, but that discomfort is a signal that we are in touch with the fact that we're out of touch. And at that point, we can make a choice. I think the simplest, most direct route, I have a lot of tricks up my sleeve for this, but the simplest, most direct route is to cultivate self-love or self-acceptance or self-compassion, just to be passionate for ourselves a little bit more every day. And I have a little technique for doing that. Would you like me to?
Sure. Let's share a technique that our listeners can practice or apply in their lives.
Okay. Now, for some people, when they hear this, especially if they're not a Californian like me, you know, where this is very nice to have these conversations, it might sound a little trite or a little odd, but, you know, if I would ask those listeners to just be open to themselves and give it a try, even if it feels silly, because it's very powerful. It's a technique I call Sweet Me. And whenever we start feeling uncomfortable about ourselves, if we take a breath and silently drop the words, sweet me, into ourselves, just the way we might drop two pebbles into a pond and let them float down toward the bottom in whatever way they will, if we do that with the word sweet me and drop them into ourselves and let them float down in whatever way they will without controlling, and then do it again, sweet me, sweet me. It always creates a tiny little environment of self-compassion. Sometimes that self-compassion is too subtle to experience right then, especially if that inner self-critic is being very loud, or the emotion of feeling, oh, I did something that was so stupid, or why did I say that, or I'm never going to really get my life together. That can be a very loud kind of inner dialogue. Sweet me and self-compassion always starts in a very subtle way. So don't be discouraged if you don't suddenly feel better, but do it for a week every time you feel uncomfortable with yourself. Three sweet me's. Sweet me and a breath. Sweet me and a breath. Sweet me. And it's important to note, you're not saying that you are worthy of somebody calling you sweet, because people always think, well, I don't feel like I'm sweet. Well, that's not the point. You're dropping sweetness into your inner environment. You're dropping compassion into your inner environment. And to do it repeatedly for a week, it will take root, and that self-compassion will start to grow on its own. I find that's one of the single biggest changes a person can make. to start to be in touch with their true self and become comfortable in their own skin.
Do you have any techniques for achieving absolute and complete contentment? We spoke about that earlier, you and I, before we came on the air.
Yes, and there are lots of things, but, you know, I think we've all had experiences where we all of a sudden, for no reason, felt peace or well-being, or we step outside and suddenly the flowers have more color, or we realize beauty is all around us and we weren't noticing it, or we just feel gratitude. And I think very often it comes from being in harmony with ourselves, much in the way I was just talking about with Sweet Me, being in touch with our true self. We're putting ourselves in circumstances that absolutely match who we are. For example, I'll share with listeners what that experience was with me yesterday that prompted that. What was my phrase? Absolute and complete contentment?
That was your phrase.
Yeah. I was interviewing you for your series of interviews about you on your blog radio website, and I had such a fabulous time talking with you. You and I, you know, have great conversations.
We go on a long time.
I know, it is good. And after that interview, I had such a feeling of I was in the right place, the right time for me. I love being in that groove of deep, meaningful, joyful, interesting conversations. And I felt so aligned. I stepped outside in my backyard. My dog was lying in the grass on the hill in my backyard. And my dog is my favorite person in the whole world, so cute as could be. He's a lab and golden retriever mix, for those who must imagine people's dogs whenever they're mentioned. And my cat, my orange kitty, was also outside. And I went out there and I just laid down on the grass right next to both of them. And I had the smell of the grass, the warm sunshine, my favorite critters. It was in alignment in myself. I had absolute, pure, complete contentment that felt like this is all I need in life. And I think we all have the ability, I know we all have the ability to experience that, and most people have it from time to time. When we get in touch with our true self, our essence, we operate from that place more and more. We put ourselves spontaneously into situations that match our true self. We make choices from that place. We feel comfortable in our own skin. We feel absolute and complete contentment more and more until it becomes a regular occurrence. I believe that is our natural state, and all of us have the longing and the desire to get back to it.
Have you always believed that and experienced it, or did some life experience cause you to become closer connected to that perspective?
I had an epiphany when I was 34 years old that turned the tide for me. It was a pivotal year that completely changed the direction of my life.
Talk about that.
Well, previously, I would call myself a highly critical person. I had really good friendships and so on, but I can remember that one criticism I used to get from my friends is, "Marcia, I feel always afraid you're going to judge me." And that really hurt because I never wanted to, but I knew what they meant. I was raised in a very judgmental family. And so along with that, you know, I had a lot of insecurity. I also was a very driven person. I was a part owner in a small business, and I loved it so much. I loved business. I loved my work with such an intensity that I had become a real workaholic. And when I wasn't working, I was thinking about work. And I couldn't really relax. And so finally, I even stopped taking vacations because I was thinking about work all the time. And as you can imagine, with that kind of drive and workaholism, there is a stress level that builds. One day, I was receiving an acupressure session for my stress. I kind of thought, well, if I get enough massages or enough acupressure, I'll be able to continue this highly stressed lifestyle.
your life will be able to accommodate it more easily.
Yeah, like that level of stress management is going to work. In that acupressure session, as I was lying there on the bodywork table, all of a sudden, and this was my, Gail Sylvia, this was my first clear message from my intuition, from that inner voice that I call the voice of true self. And very clearly I heard within myself the message that I had to stop my workaholic lifestyle or I was going to die, either in an accident or from cancer.
Do you think that all of us have a voice within that's trying to become more audible, but we keep muting it or suppressing it and denying its existence, trying to tune it out?
I 100% believe that. Or the voice normally is very subtle. You know, the deeper we go into ourselves, the more subtle the experiences are. So they sometimes can't compete with the very loud emotions of stress and drive and unhappiness or frustration or, you know, and all those other things, or fear. Fear is a very loud physical experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the deeper we go into ourselves, the more subtle, the quieter everything is. When we get to that state of well-being, it's a much quieter well-being, although it is more powerful. And when we get to that inner voice, it is a quieter voice. I had to be so quiet that I was just lying there with nothing in my mind on that acupressure table. And I heard that, and not only did I hear it, but I felt in every cell in my body that that was the truth. And it was very upsetting on one level. In fact, I started crying really loudly because I didn't want to die. My personality and my body had its own reaction. But even while I was crying so hard, in the core of me, there was pure stillness, pure well-being. Nothing could possibly be of disturbance there. And I knew that's where the message was coming from. I'd also, in that quiet core, was complete love, no judgment. There was support. There was nurturing. And that's when I realized that's the source I need to be following, not the drive in my outer self, in my conditioned self, in the part of me that learned I'm not an artist anymore, or I'm not good enough, or I have to always be overachieving to make myself okay or to feel okay. That inner core of quiet well-being, knowingness, absolute knowingness and support, that was my source. So I thought about it, and 2 weeks later, I walked away from that business. And
were you afraid?
Yes and no. Again, that's when I discovered the two levels. And the more superficial one, the one we're really conditioned to have our personality, it's the part that's really created for our survival and to navigate the social realms of our culture, that part was so scared. I had money saved up, but I didn't know how long. I didn't know what I was going to do next. I thought, well, I'll just take two months, and then I'll go work in a corporation or something. Well, that never happened.
How many years ago was it, Marcia? Has it been, Marcia?
It was 1984. I was 34 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be about a year and a half that I didn't work. And so I was really afraid. I was afraid I was going to be a bag lady. You know, all those survival fears come up. And I thought my family will think I'm crazy. So I didn't quite tell them exactly what was going on. But at the same time, I was sitting down every day, turning to that inner source, true self. I was asking questions because the conversation had started. I had access then. And I started asking, what am I going to do? Who am I? What is this about? And Gail, Sylvia, the answers I got surprised me so much, because I thought I would hear what was wrong with me and what I should do to get better, be a better person, etc.
A critical voice.
Yes, that's the one I had been consulting, you know, all my life. And
did you hear the sweet me voice instead?
You guessed it, absolutely, although I didn't come up with a sweet me technique until a couple decades later. But yes, and absolutely everything that was said to me from my deep, true self was loving, compassionate. It told me what a beautiful person I was, how complete I was, what my skills were. And then beyond that, told me everything would be all right and to keep being in touch with myself. And then even beyond that, it described the world to me in a way I had never seen it. I think, been afraid of the world and afraid to be vulnerable. And I was doing a lot of compensating, you know, for feeling insecure in my relationship with life and with the world. And I got a description of the world as we would call it a more global way, and of all people being connected and all people having in their core this their true self, which is, I think, their door, that's the personal door that's to God and to greater experience and to whatever is kind and wonderful and creative that we experience to be bigger than ourselves.
I think as I listen to you, what's really making a strong impression upon me, Marcia, is that you were listening to your own voice instead of those outside of yourself. Because so often, even people with the best of intentions, you know, their message and their advice and their good intentions are coming from a place of their own fears being transferred onto others. And I have not yet heard you say or make any reference to outer voices, but the importance of opening your own heart and letting the healing begin by listening, quieting yourself long enough to listen to your own voice. And that voice is what I'm believing you would define as the pure you.
Yes, well put. That is exactly it. And that is, once we get in touch with it, it is a 100% reliable voice, and it always has our well-being at heart, and in fact knows exactly how to help us cultivate well-being within ourselves and also then within the circumstances that we choose or create in our outer life that support our well-being, including maybe different types of relationships or a change in work or we find our true purpose. And I have since then, after that year and a half, I discovered I had that ability to see other people at that greater level, and I began to do coaching with them to help them get in touch with it. And that has been the joy of my life. One thing people often say is, well, how can I tell if when I'm trying to listen to my true self's voice, how can I tell if it's really coming from a deep place or if it's just my regular old thoughts or conditioning? And here's a really simple answer. If that inner voice is in any way making you feel bad about yourself,
then it's not the true voice.
Not the truth. Or feeling, or if it's in any way critical about anybody, it's not the true voice. It's you might be getting closer to it, but it's still more superficial, because that true voice, which is our spirit, our essence, our true self, is unconditionally loving and supportive and so on, and will only speak to us in a way that helps us feel more of those qualities of well-being and self-appreciation and liberation.
This is not to be confused with hearing those voices, you know, that voice within ourselves, this God, spirit, love, correcting us, you know, when we, for example, what you just said should not be confused with neglecting or overlooking opportunities for self-improvement. And as an example, you know, when I'm quiet and I'm still, I also become aware of behaviors that I need to change that affect others or myself inappropriately, and not to ignore or deny that voice and want to only hear voices, you know, the words or the messages that feel good to me. You know? Do you know what I mean?
I do, and I want to combine them. When in touch with true self, you're likely to get a message that makes you feel good about yourself and gives you that correction.
Yes.
For example, what happened for me was a lot of times in those circumstances, you know, say for example, when I was being overly judgmental, or as I mentioned earlier, the voice of my true self would say, "Of course you do that. Of course. And here's why. Because you feel insecure, because you're not rooted in your inner well-being. Here's a few things to do to be rooted in your inner well-being so that then when you're thinking about other people or you're with other people, you won't feel that tendency to criticize because you already feel balanced. You feel good, and you will see others then through that eye, through those eyes of well-being. And you'll see what's lovely and wonderful in them and connect with them around that. Or if you need to give them some corrective feedback, you will give it to them in a way that is supportive and they feel more whole, more seen than they did before you spoke.
You are also able to receive corrective feedback.
When it's given in that way, sure.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason we resist corrective feedback is because if it's going to make us feel diminished,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's actually not the greater truth.
Mm-hmm.
That corrective feedback also connects us with our greater self and makes us feel more whole, and as though we have an opportunity to live more in alignment with who we are, and so on. Then, oh my gosh, it's lovely. It feels like a gift because none of us really wants to be doing anything that diminishes, hurts, or harms anyone else. So that corrective feedback can feel like it is saving us from suffering as well.
How does religious belief play into or is it a part of your true self conversations and development?
For me, the experience is spiritual, not religious.
Distinguish those for our listeners, because sometimes people have a tendency to mix the two. And they're distinctly different.
Well, and I think people can mix them.
Mm-hmm.
My concern with when people go religious, very often within every religion I'm aware of has some dogma to it that people can latch onto if they want to. And that can be rigid. And I talk with a lot of people who feel that religion can shut them down or make them feel like they're not worthy. Now, I'm not saying...
Because of the dogma.
Yes, not because of the religion itself. I think religions all have something very good at the heart, but we sometimes latch on to the dogma. And when we listen to our true self, there's no dogma, there's no shoulds. It's a very different kind of experience. I have talked with people who have both. They have that true self experience, or they use their religion in a way that is actually through their relationship with God, cultivating that true self connection within themselves. They just don't call it that. So the two can mix beautifully. It depends on how we use them.
Marcia Nelson, I am so sorry that we were running out of time. I can't believe it. I'm looking at the clock and, you know, one of the other conversations that we're going to pick up on. So I'm glad that our listeners will know that this is going to continue forward in a next episode with you, is, you know, that truth always transforms non-truth and how that applies to wealth and feminism. You have a new book that will be coming out that addresses that. Can you say a few words briefly about that topic, and then we'll use that as the teaser for the next conversation?
Because we know there will be more.
There will be more.
And when this one's over, I'm going to go outside and lie on the hill in my backyard with my dog and my cat and have absolute and complete contentment.
And I think I will also join you from where I am doing the same. Talk to us very briefly about, you know, the new feminine wealth.
I'm writing this book now called, by the way, just so people can know, the full title of my previous book is Coming Home, The Return.
Return. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Coming Home, The Return to True Self.
Yes.
And they can go to my website to Amazon.com and get that book for more of what we've been talking about. But the new book is that I am now writing and I'm interviewing women around the world for is The New Feminine Wealth. I believe that because it's just in the last really 3 decades that women have stepped into enough economic power for themselves that a paradigm of wealth that is coming from a female perspective, infusing female values and expectations and desires into our view of money and our paradigm of wealth. It's a fascinating subject, and we will talk more about it. But it's time we really started talking about that with the stress and somewhat collapse of what I consider the old structure of wealth, which really has been designed by men, and I'm not saying anything negative about men. It's just the fact that for, you know, centuries, men have had the financial power, and they created a structure out of it. And women now have financial power and financial expectations for themselves that have never existed before. And we have a different way if we really are just talking about ourselves and exploring this. There's a different view of wealth and a different paradigm emerging. So I'm getting a conversation going about that. So the book will be The New Feminine Wealth. And people can contact me, go to my website, find out more at thenewfemininewealth.com. Thenewfemininewealth.com.
They can also find this conversation that Marcia Nelson and I have had today on sylviaglobal.com and also on iTunes as a podcast, thenewfemininewealth.com, author, life coach, confidant, and catalyst for high net worth women. Marcia Nelson, thank you so very much for sharing your wisdom and insight and your talents with us today. Have a wonderful day, okay? I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Great.